So we started doing this yesterday, and somehow in the process, there were people from all over the country who were getting involved. And what we had always done on CNN was establish what we had called a national conversation. And suddenly there was a glimmer of this national conversation taking place with people from Dallas and parts of New York and Florida listening in on iHeartRadio. And that was pretty cool. It was pretty cool to be able to reestablish this friendship. Because TV is nice, but radio is twice as nice. And it's because you can do on the radio what you can't do on television. You know, it's interesting. There's this huge story I was reading about on the Huffington Post. Oh, remind me, I just got a call from the Huffington Post, and they want to comment, Mo.
Are you going to give them one?
Yeah, they're nice people.
Okay.
I just got an email saying we'd like for you to comment on something today having to do, I think, with Marco Rubio. So let's figure out what we're going to say and all that later.
Okay.
But just remember me.
You remember.
Yeah, remember what I'm saying. But the important thing is that with radio, you're actually able to have a conversation and switch the topic, which is the way people normally speak. There's this huge story on the Huffington Post on how my buddy Shep Smith recently was in the middle of a story and changed the topic and went into something else. And they actually wrote an article. Oh, my God, did you see what he did? He was talking about something, and then he switched and went to something else because he just wanted to. Well, hello, what do we do? What do we do here on radio every day? This is amazing. And, look, it's a little bit of self-discovery for me. And I hope you guys are willing to allow me that as we establish this national conversation. And, boy, is it fun. So how do we do it? Oh, many of you listening around the country, join the conversation just as you did when we were on CNN by going to Twitter. And that's Rick Sanchez TV. Yesterday we had so many people commenting on this. And we will get to some of the most remarkable stories that I have seen in a long time. Joe Arpaio, some might say, at it again. And he can tell, did you know that Joe Arpaio can choose you and tell whether you are illegal or legal by simply looking at the clothes that you're wearing? It's all he needs. You think I'm kidding? You know how I know this?
It has to do with their conduct, what type of clothes they're wearing, their speech.
That's Joe Arpaio talking to me on CNN. It's an interview I did, and I'm going to let you listen to that because I think it's significant. Then there's George and Shelley Zimmerman. Have you heard the audios? We had them on first here as they started to come out. It's been really a drip drop, and more are now coming out. And this is crazy. The idea that this couple was recorded having conversations where they seem to be scheming on how they're going to lie to prosecutors about money they have but don't want anyone to know about, money that was sent to them by people who may not even have a lot of money who believed in him. And they sent it to him so he can defend himself, so he can pay for his legal costs. And this guy is caught what appears to me to be red-handed. I'm going to let you decide. I want you to listen to this with us. And you tell me if this guy is actually scheming with his wife to hide this money, keep it from the government, and worse, spend some of it on himself and on his family by paying off debts and then going to the court and poor-mouthing and saying, we ain't got no money. And then there's Fast and Furious. Have you heard? Fast and Furious is a case that does not make Eric Holder look good, nor should it. And we have a different perspective on this, the type of perspective you would never get from the mainstream media. You would never get it on the left or on the right, because they don't have people who look like me on television. Never have, because they don't seem to think that we matter. but we do, and we have something to say. And in the case of Eric Holder, we are not happy. We are not happy with Fast and Furious. And not because of what you may think or not because of what you've heard before, but because as a Latino living in the United States, I look at this and I see complete and utter disregard. And I don't like it. And have you heard about George Bush's head on a stick?
Literally.
Game of Thrones. Somebody screwed up big time. And then, you know what's worse than a screw-up? What's worse? Mondo, what's worse than a screw-up?
Big screw-up?
Lying about it afterwards.
The lie is always worse than the actual.
When you're caught red-handed and you don't know, you're absolutely going to love this story. But first, here we go. This is the story about the President of the United States. And it tells you, I'm looking at Mondo and he's looking at me like I am absolutely crazy. This would be number one.
The President.
I love that. Hey, hit me that again.
The President.
I love that. We're going to get this so it's going to be like, you know, like romance at some point.
The President.
The President of the... Now, I stepped over it. One more time.
It was in unison.
But one more time.
The President.
I love you. Here we go. The President of the United States is being accused of having something which is possibly really shocking. And I think Americans should be somewhat surprised that this is taking place. I want to read to you what has been written about this plan by the President of the United States, where essentially every Tuesday he convenes a meeting with about two dozen security officials. Hear me out here. The President of the United States sits down with about two dozen security officials. They scan the intelligence reports, and they make recommendations on which terrorists to target for assassination. And the President of the United States, Mr. Obama, makes the final determination on who to target. Have you ever heard of such a thing? Do you feel like a citizen of the United States you should know if your president not only has the right to sit down and decide who he's going to target for assassination, but whether you should at least be privy to the fact that our country has gotten to the point where we can do that? Should there be a discussion about a possible constitutional violation? Should we in the media be at least talking about this? I'm not talking about giving out information. I'm not talking about saying, oh, he's going to hit Ahmed over here in Yemen tomorrow at 3:15 outside the grocery store. No, no, no. I'm just talking about, in general, the fact that we now do this. Well, it would seem to me, and I think it would seem to most thinking Americans, that we live in a country where we should have the right to know that. We can decide and filter through the information as we choose to, whether we all line up and have a huge, huge protest because we hate it, or we get on the other side and say we like it. But shouldn't we at least know? Isn't that what makes us different from China and Cuba and so many other places in the world? Isn't that important? Instead, the reaction of this has been unbelievable. I want you to hear, hold this, don't play it now. I want you to hear when we come back from the break. I want you to hear when we come back from the break the antithesis of what I have just expressed. I have said this is something we should know and this is something we should maybe filter through and discuss. Then there's the other side. The side that says, well, let me hold you on that. Because I want you to feel what I felt when I heard these. We have taken all the different sound pops of all the different people in the media and in politics reacting to this story, and you will be shocked, shocked by what they have to say. This is KTLK AM. I'm Rick Sanchez. We're starting a new national conversation, and it's going to be fun.
Tomorrow, 6 till 9. It's Stephanie Miller on K-Talk AM 1150. President Obama's hit list.
And that's exactly what it is. It's a hit list. And it's news. And people should know if the president has a hit list. people should know if the president of the United States has that power. It's not like he's revealing who's going to get hit. Look, I don't want to know the specific plans. I want to know there may be an invasion, but I don't want to know which beach on Normandy it's going to take place. I don't want to hurt my country's national defense. But the fact that we have the power to be able to do something, I should know that. I'm sorry, but that's why I left a communist country and came to the United States of America. That's why my parents brought me here, and that's why I'm so grateful to live in the only country in the world where democracy still stands as the most important achievement, and where they wrote our right to know stuff at the very top of the list. At the very top. So yes, again, it's not like they're revealing who he's going to hit or when it's going to happen. If the president of the United States has a power to decide who lives, who dies, I want to know he has that power. Folks, we're not in Moscow. We're not in Havana. We're not in China. So, I don't know if you disagree with me on that. Look, reach out to me. You know we're on Twitter, right? How do people get a hold of us?
Well, if they want to get in touch with you, Rick, you can hit Jim, you can hit be hit at Rick Sanchez TV. That's at Rick Sanchez TV.
That's on Twitter. And they can also call?
You can call us at 877-520-1150. That's 877-520-1150.
I want to know what you think about this, because what's interesting to me is the fact that what I expected the reaction would be is completely counter. This is kind of like the world we live in. Like a guy named Gary Creep is about to become a judge in San Diego, and he's about to beat a guy who's an experienced prosecutor. How does that happen? And by the way, pardon me for digressing, I've got plenty of information on Mr. Creep. Yes, we did a little digging on Mr. Creep. And wait till you find out what I am going to share with you. It's forthcoming. But first, the reaction on the so-called president's hit list. Listen to what the reaction was. Listen to what the reaction was inside the loop.
Somebody is leaking secret national security intelligence to the public.
These leaks have to stop.
This is one of the most serious breaches in the last couple articles that have come out that I've seen.
This is the most shameful cascade of leaks I've ever heard or seen in government.
An avalanche of leaks. People just talk too much.
People talk too much. Yes, thank goodness they do. That's what makes us different, damn it. What is it that they don't understand? Because, oh, makes you want to hit your head against the wall. Yes, and reporters who are complaining about the leaks are jealous that they didn't get them. And politicians who complain about the leak are simply grandstanding. Yes, yes, that is the fact. How can you possibly complain about knowing things? I mean, it's our responsibility to be informed in a democracy. If you don't want to be informed, if you don't want to know things, leave. Take my place in Cuba, Guanabacoa. That's where I was born. Say it with me, Guanabacoa, little town outside Havana. There, you're not supposed to know things, and you should be happy you don't. Here, we're supposed to know things. And we're unhappy we do. Can someone help figure that out for me? I mean, it just seems crazy. Natalie's on the air. She wants to yell at me, I think. Natalie, go ahead.
How are you? I have seen you a few times at CNN, and that's why I don't put it. My station is MSNBC, where intelligent people discuss cases, mm-hmm. and also they show proof. And what I love, Ed Scholz and Rachel Maddow, and I'm very much aware of what you Republicans, Tea Party that belong to Norquist, and all the bad things that you're saying, some of it are lies, plain lies.
Wait a minute, Natalie!
Yes.
Wait a minute. Can I stop you for just a minute and ask you a question?
Yes.
Did you just call me a Republican?
Oh, yeah. You sound like it. If you sound like it, you look like it. If a duck looks like a duck and quacks like a duck, that's what you are.
Well, you'll be happy to know that I am far from it, and I take your phone call as an absolute compliment. Because when people on the left think I'm on the right, and just as many people on the right think I'm on the left, that means, Natalie, that I am doing my job, and I'm glad you pointed that out. Let's go to Dory. She's standing by as well, and she's in Los Angeles. Dory, what do you have to say about this?
Hi, I'm a guy. I'm not a girl, but that's okay.
That's okay. At least you're not a fish.
That's correct.
Mondo doesn't even get that. My board guy over here is trying to figure out why that we thought that was funny. What is it about Dory that is possibly a fish? Could you help him, Dory? Explain that to my board guy.
The Ellen DeGeneres character in the movie that she did with Albert Brooks.
Ding, ding, ding.
Oh, that's right.
Don't you remember?
Finding Nemo.
Finding Nemo, baby.
Great movie.
Sorry about that, Dory. We were just having a little fun with you here. What's your point, man?
That's it. The assassination list. There's a... You call it assassination list. These are people that have come out and declared war against the United States.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the difference between that and an assassination list is this country has been doing this for 70, 80 years in secrecy.
Yeah,
in our
I know.
Name.
I'm Hispanic. I remember when we assassinated Allende. Go on.
Correct. So... What has been going on, even under the Bush administration, this is all done secretly where they did it without the president's knowing. What this president is doing is that if this is going to happen, and these are people that we are specifically targeting,
uh-huh.
I want to know who it is, and I'm going to take the responsibility of those actions so that there isn't any plausible deniability on my part. I'm the president.
Are we arguing, Dory? I have no idea where the hell you're going with this, because all I'm basically saying is, that if this is something that our country can do as a citizen, I want to know we can do it. That's all I've said. And you're sitting here reading to me something about what the policy does and what it's initiated and stuff, which is great. Good information. I'm glad you shared with us. Call us again. But that's not what we're talking about here. We're talking about the fact that there are people in this country who are literally coming out and castigating the fact that the story is even known. See, we're going to another level here. We're beyond the fact that we know we have a hit list. We've already spoken about why it's there, why it might be necessary, why it may not be necessary, why it may be a constitutional violation, why it may not be a constitutional violation. We're moving on, Dory. What we're talking about now is, why is it that people inside Washington aren't talking about the story? Instead, they're talking about the fact that it was leaked. Why aren't they talking about that? See, that's what I think is fascinating. I'm going to let you... The phone lines are lit up. People are going crazy on Twitter with this already. I want to hear what people have to say. Here we go with Matt Ruta saying, POTUS can take out enemies of the state. Why is that something that should be a secret? He agrees with me. We got one so far, Mondo. We'll see if we can build it up a little bit. I'm Rick Sanchez. This is KTLK AM 1150. I'm so happy to be here. This is an important national conversation. Let's continue it on the other side, and I'll get to Pat and Charles standing by. We'll be right back.
Don't miss out on the multimedia mayhem. KTLK AM 1150.com. President Obama's hit list.
And people are talking about it, and so are we. This is Rick Sanchez, and this is a part of your national conversation. You know author Glenn Greenwald, right? I mean, he is a lefty. Very much a lefty. He's blasting Obama for this. Didn't he do Outfoxed? I think Glenn Greenwald did Outfoxed. Check on that, Mo, when you get a chance for me. Here's what he's saying. He has put, the president, quote, he has put a prettier and more palatable face on extremely ugly policies. Now, that's Glenn Greenwald. That's not me. That's Glenn Greenwald saying that. I'm not necessarily judging the policy one way or another, but I am saying that we should talk about the policy and the fact that we now know something we didn't know before about the powers of our president and our government. And for that, we should be grateful. We should not be complaining. We should not literally sound like we want to be in the dark, which is unfortunately the way our media today is. They want to keep you in the dark. They don't care if you know. In many cases, they don't want you to know because it doesn't fit their particular strategery. You want to hear what I'm talking about between media and politicians on this story? Here's what they had to say.
Somebody is leaking secret national security intelligence to the public.
These leaks have to stop.
This is one of the most serious breaches in the last couple articles that have come out that I've seen.
This is the most shameful cascade of leaks I've ever heard or seen in government.
An avalanche of leaks. People just talk too much.
People just talk too much. Think about that. Yes! We want them to talk. I've been a reporter all my life. My job is to get people to talk and tell me things that I think are important. I am supposed to be the eyes and ears of the American people as a reporter, not me particularly. And that's what we're supposed to do. We're not supposed to be going through this and going, well, I don't want to say that because, well, are there times? Yes. There was the famous case involving the New York Times having to do with the Cuban Missile Crisis. There was the Pentagon Papers. There are times when things need to not be reported for national security. This is not one of them. This is not one of them. Terry's joining us from Los Angeles. Terry, go ahead.
Did you say Terry?
It says Terry here on the board. What is your name?
My name, it's Terry. I wasn't sure if you were talking to me. I just wanted to call and say I have absolutely no problem with this so-called hit list that the president has. His number one job is to keep this country and Americans safe. And
do you want to know about it? Do you want to know about it?
Yeah, I'm fine knowing about it.
Okay.
I have no problem knowing about it.
Well, that's what we're talking about. We're talking about people who say, I'm shocked. I shouldn't know about this. I don't want to know. That's what you're hearing in parts of the media and inside the Beltway.
No, I'm fine knowing about it. I have no problem.
I appreciate your opinion, Terry. Let's go to Pat. She's standing by in Upland. What do you say, Pat?
He's standing by.
Man, I'm going to get one of these right. That's my fault, Pat. Pat, I still love you like a brother, okay?
All right. Hey, beautiful, man. Hey, I have no problem with the hit list either. I don't understand why people do. If anything, it's going to maybe put the fear of God into some of these terrorists running around thinking that they're getting away with something.
Let me hear you right, though. You're also saying you don't have a problem with the fact that the hit list was reported, right? Not the hit list itself, but the fact that we're empowered now to do that.
No, not at all. I have no problem with that.
Then you disagree, as I do, with these people in Washington who seem to be feigning this shock, right?
It's all partisan bullcrap, in my opinion. But, yeah, I disagree.
Partisan bullcrap, baby. I could not agree with you anymore if I was sitting there right now kissing you on the lips. Charles is standing by in Los Angeles, and he's joining us. Charles, what you got?
Yes, Rick. Well, first of all, my two favorite YouTube videos are Cab Calloway, the Dickens Brothers, and then Rick Scott being grilled by Rick Sanchez.
Thank you, man. I certainly appreciate
that. That was a great video, man. You exposed that guy. Everybody should check out that video.
I wish more people in the media would do those types of interviews because that's really what we're supposed to do, isn't it?
That's right. That's right. You got down to the root, man. You got down to the marrow.
Yeah, it was good marrow, too. But you know what's weird? And we're going to be talking about this as well. I'm glad you got us on Rick Scott for just a moment. Rick Scott is now the governor of the state of Florida. And possibly by late today, we're going to find out that another person I used to talk about when I was on CNN, a gentleman named Gary Creep. Do you know what I have found out about Gary Creep? I have found out that what Gary Creep used to do with another fella may shock you. Well, here's the news, though. Here's what we now know about Gary Creep. Those of you who may be listening to us a little further down south, He's about to become one of your new judges. Yeah, this guy is about to become a judge. Let me share with you how much we got before we go to the break, gentlemen. I'm trying to decide whether we should try and get this. I got 2, 3, and 4.
General idea.
I love that about you. This guy is named Gary Creep. This guy is about to become a judge in San Diego. Let me read you the latest information that I've just received. With only 2,000 votes left to count, a Ramona attorney known for conservative views had tallied as of Monday 1,458 more votes than his opponent, a veteran county prosecutor, as the two men vied to become a San Diego Superior Court judge. First of all, his name is Creep. Second of all, he's acted like a creep. And he's about to take out a guy, we presume. Check the latest numbers on that, if you would, for me, Mo. See how that race stands right now. See if they've announced that they are ready to declare a winner in this. He's taken out a guy who's a veteran county prosecutor because we've maybe gotten to the point in this country where we don't want competence. I mean, how does Rick Scott become the governor of Florida? He was hit with the biggest fraud federal suit in the history of the United States. And he becomes the governor of Florida. This guy, Gary Creep, is a birther, beyond birther. In fact, when we come back, I'm going to break down the beyond birther information that we dug up, that we found for you, that I'm going to share with you here on KTLK AM 1150. I'm Rick Sanchez. We're going to be right back.
Paradise found. You're listening to LA's talk station, KTalk AM 1150. A man named Creep.
That's his name. His name is Creep. I'm Rick Sanchez, and I got to tell you about this guy, because this guy's about to become a judge, a San Diego Superior Court judge. Who would vote for? First of all, when you go to the ballot box and you see the name Creep, doesn't something at least make you want to do, I don't know, a double take? Research? But that means you might have to read. Here's what I have found out. And I've been keeping my eye on this guy for years. This guy Creep has a sidekick, a fellow named Bill Keller. They started something called Live Prayer. Follow me here. They hate the President of the United States so much. They hate Barack Obama so much, they turned it into a full-blown cash machine. I'm not making this up, folks. This is the pitch. This is what they did. You sent them $30, and they would make sure that questions about President Obama got rewarded. In other words, they created a machine to help attack the President of the United States. Not long after he was in office, by the way. They didn't even give this guy a chance. And if you joined his cause, you'd receive a specially created got a birth certificate with a question mark. Oh, yeah. You get a bumper sticker where you get to tell the whole world how much you hate this African-American president. Isn't that nice? Also, you can help a group called the United States Justice Foundation. That's right. In their efforts to try and force the president to produce his birth certificate. There we go again. So by making this gift of $30, you enable them to send a fax on your behalf to all 50 attorney generals all over the United States saying, make sure this guy shows his birth certificate. Demanding Eric Holder to do just that. And to investigate the president. So you go to your phone and you basically make sure you tell President Obama to prove where he was born. That's what this guy, Bill Keller and Gary Creep, did, right? And only for $30. Hey, what a country. But wait, Wait. Espérate. Tengo más. I've got more information. We did a little digging. We did a little research. And guess what we found about Mr. Keller? Guess what we found about Mr. Keller? That would be Mr. Creep's sidekick. This guy who wants your money. For starters, see, this is what we're supposed to do. We're supposed to give you information you can use. And I'm glad we're able to do this for you. And I'm glad we can have this discussion. I'm reading what you all are saying right now on Twitter. And I'm loving it. Because we're all catching on. I love some of the comments that have come in so far. Because Americans are smart and open-minded. And Americans want information. And they don't just want to be spoon-fed vitriol from the left or the right. So let me get back to the Creep and Keller story. For starters, this fella Keller was $80,000 in debt when he began his birth certificate venture. Are you surprised? It's all about the Benjamins. But it gets better. Bill Keller was convicted in 1989 for insider trading. And he spent 2.5 years in prison. Did you know that? Well, guess what? You do now. I want to know what you think of this. If you're in San Diego and you voted for this fella, or you have some connection to this story, I want you to call me. I want you to call me. It's 877-520-1150. Did I get that right?
You got it right.
Awesome job.
You guys are making fun of me.
No, not at all. No.
Yes, you are.
Oh, maybe.
So a guy charged with fraud is asking your grandmother to send him money so that we can attack this African-American pretend president. Those are his words, not mine. And by the way, where do you think I found this information about Keller? Sometimes digging ain't so hard, folks. I found it on his own website. He cops to it. Get you to his website. Send him money by getting people irrationally riled up about the president of the United States with phony accusations. What a country. By the way, I'll tell you something. Y'all remember when I was on CNN and I used to try and go after characters like this a lot. Sometimes we did. It's tough, though, sometimes on cable news. But that's another story, one we will share at some point. And boy, do I have a lot to say about the media. I do have a lot to say about that particular domain. But, you know, it's funny because I called these fellas and said, come on my show. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe I got it wrong. Explain yourselves to me. Because it seems to me like you're just, you know, ponying up, trumping up something against this president because you hate him. And worse, you're doing it just for money. And, I mean, you know, it seems that way, but I could be wrong. Come on my show. They didn't. They didn't. Celine is joining us from Los Angeles. You are on the air, Celine. What's up?
Hey, Rick. Thank you for bringing this conversation. I think what we need to do is discuss what's happening here on a national strategy that's being funded by the Koch brothers, Sheldon Adelson. There's like four billionaires that are buying our country, and they're funding it, and that's why this creep guy got elected. It's simply because of the money. Thank you, Citizens United. And they're going around the country, putting judges in places, congressmen, infiltrating our country.
That is a great point, Celine, and I want to thank you for calling because that's exactly what's going on. I mean, look, it's not about left or right here. It's about money. It's about someone. Go to my book. In fact, if you want to read more about Creep, go and get Conventional Idiocy, the book that I wrote. And that particular section on Creep is one of the chapters I wrote My golly, I can't remember the name of that chapter, but there's more as well on money. Let me see if I can dig that. I'm going to dig that up, and I'm going to bring that to your attention in the next. I did a study on this. What I wanted to know was how often people who are given money by a particular donor then vote for the cause in favor of that donor. How often does that happen? In other words, if I work for company X and I give money to politician B, well, does it automatically mean that politician B will then vote for company X's policies? Yes. That's what I found out. Yes. And you hear all the time, and the media doesn't talk about this. And they don't break it down, and it's easy to break it down. Because all you got to do is go to opensecrets.org, and it's all there. Go to opensecrets.org, and it's all there. You know, who got the money, when they got the money, how they voted. It's all there. It's not hard to add it up. And I found out that they do, in fact, vote proportional to who gave them the money. And I'm going to break it down. I'm going to name names for you. I'm going to tell you who it was, why they did it. I'm going to tell you who they're tied to, because that's important, because it is. Celine is right. And now it's worse with the Citizens United case. It's not just about people getting money and then voting according to what those people who gave them the money want. Now it's about individuals who have so much money, all they want to do is get their ilk in place. And they're doing it. And they're doing it successfully. And if we don't wake up, and if we don't start talking about this, kudos to John McCain. Kudos to John McCain. John McCain went on the Sunday morning talk shows this week, and he said this is crazy. We're going to look for that. We're going to look for that sound, see if we can play that for you. Did you hear John McCain? Did you hear John McCain? You know, a lot of people say some things from time to time about old John that, you know, because he did run against Obama. But you know what? I know a lot of you guys out there are going to disagree with me because, you know, he's got an R in front of his name, so you automatically want to hate him. Let me tell you something. If you really look into this man's record, and even during his campaign, and I learned a lot about the movie about Sarah Palin, especially when he was faced with decisions that he had to make where she wanted to go way to the right, and he said, no, I can't do that as an American. I respect that. And I respect John McCain this weekend for going on the Sunday morning talk shows as a Republican and criticizing Republican policies that have put us where we are, where, as Celine says, people are buying offices. That ain't right. I'm Rick Sanchez, coming back in just a bit. You know, this is amazing. You know, remember I was telling you that this is, in many ways, a conversation that we can have all over the country? Remember our moniker was the National Conversation when we were on CNN? And we kind of read each other's thoughts. And during the newscast, I was on Twitter talking to you, and you were talking to me. And I was just, I swear to God, I was just sitting here moments ago trying to remember where it was in my book, which I often use as research, because we did a lot of research in that book to get material on money in politics so I can spell out for you who were the politicians that we followed and added up their money and then checked to see how they voted. And someone on Twitter tells me, Rick, it's page 71. Someone on Twitter is telling me, yeah, I got it right here. It's page 71. So let's go to page 71. Let's go to page 71. Because we talk about what's going on with the money in politics today, and I've got the information right here that I think you're going to want to know. I think you want to know. I think all Americans should know this, because we don't talk about this enough. We always say, yeah, they get too much money, but we never add it up. We never say, and they get money, and then they vote according to who gives them the money. See, that's the part that's missing. That's the part that's missing, news media, cable news media, television networks. I'll give you three names, Mitch McConnell, Max Baucus, and Chuck Grassley. We know them all very well, right? Who were those guys? That was the super team. That was the guy who, those are the three guys who were chosen, a Republican, a Democrat, and a Republican, to create and work with the president on the health care bill proposal, right? Pretty important stuff, the health care bill proposal. I mean, this was what was going to create this policy going forward that the United States truly needed. We know what happened to it, right? Got watered down into toilet water. I could use another term, but I won't. So let me tell you about these three fellas. In the case of Grassley, here's the guy who's in charge of kind of bringing everybody together and trying to stay in the middle and make sure that he's not being swayed one way or another. Well, remember, he said to me once on the air, pull the plug on grandma. Remember? I don't want a policy that's going to pull the plug on grandma. Oh, yeah, that makes you very balanced. So, I checked. How much money you think Mr. Grassley got from health-related industries? $983,000. $983,000. Let's go over to Mr. McConnell. What do you say, huh? From that Kentucky bluegrass. Let's check what the old Mitcher got. I checked. He eventually called this thing a monstrosity. A monstrosity! He got $1.4 million from health-related industries. I checked. That's the figure. Good luck trying to refute me, Mr. McConnell. Let's go to Mr. Max Baucus. Democrat. Also one of the three super team members who got a chance to craft this bill for us, or should I say screw it up. He got $1.1 million from health-related professionals. Now, a lot of lawmakers get money, but these guys rank among the top 15 active members of the Senate in the campaign contributions department received from health professionals. So let's make sure, if we're going to create a new policy on health for the United States of America, that we choose the three guys who are in the pocket of the health-related companies. And is there any surprise? Is there any surprise to you, Mondo? Is there any surprise to you, Mo, that this thing ended up as it did?
Not even a little bit. I mean, if you're going to spend that much money on someone, it's with the expectation that something is going to be coming in return. Support, votes, whatever.
Most definitely.
And it was. And it did. And it happened the way it did for a reason. And Celine is right. Celine, who just called us, is right, and it's getting worse today. And I don't care if you're on the left. I don't care if you're on the right. This should be about creating a better America for our children. And just waiting for a guy with a lot of money to decide for us what we're going to do, who we're going to elect, and what our policies are going to be is the best way in the world to destroy this country. I want to switch topics now.
Immigration.
Yes. Sheriff Joe, the leader of immigration. And have you asked yourself why people call him Sheriff Joe? I was listening to, the other day, one of the cable news stations that I won't name was interviewing this fella. I mean, this is a guy who has, in many ways, no, not in many, he's been accused by the U.S. government of trampling the rights of U.S. citizens. We're not talking about illegals. This guy's been accused of trampling the rights of U.S. citizens. And I'm watching an interview he's doing with a national anchor. By the way, have you noticed that there are no national anchors who are Hispanic? Have I said that to you? Have we talked about that? Have I explained to you that the national media never interviews, even interviews, people who are Hispanic, no less put them on the air as hosts? Oh, yeah, we talked about that, but I digress. So this guy has trampled the rights of possibly tens of thousands of people who are here perfectly legally. And I'm watching this interview on television, And the interviewer says, "Hey, Sheriff Joe. Hello, Sheriff Joe. Sheriff Joe, my uncle, and Sheriff Joe." Almost like, I'm sitting here thinking at home, Sheriff Joe? Not Joe Arpaio? Sheriff Joe Arpaio? Thanks for joining us, Mr. Arpaio. What does that tell me as a viewer when you call someone like this Sheriff Joe? Whose side are you on? Why are you laughing and calling the guy Sheriff Joe? And then we just had somebody call here and said that I shouldn't be so hard on the media. I shouldn't be so hard on the media? Sheriff Joe? Do you know what it's like to be a Latino and see what this man has done? This guy goes so far. This guy goes so far that he actually, I'm going to hold this. I've got a piece of tape that I want you to listen to. I've got a piece of tape that I want you to listen to where I interview Sheriff Joe. And he says to me what his strategy is, what his MO is on finding them damn illegals. Now remember, he's just getting people off the street. He doesn't know the person's been here 30 years, isn't a really good person, or the guy's a complete drug dealer who just came in yesterday and killed 20 people. I'm exaggerating on both ends, of course, but it's just, you know, hey, I got you over here. I'm Sheriff Joe and you're under arrest. Oh, you're legal. Oh, sorry. You look like you were illegal. Wait a minute. When did we do this in this country? This guy's doing this. And I know he's doing it. You know why I know he's doing it? Do you know why I know he's doing it? Because he told me he was doing it. Accidentally. He accidentally told me he was doing this. And I'm going to play it for you when we come back right here. I'm Rick Sanchez. You're listening to KTLK.
Background noise while you're exchanging emails on company time. KTLK AM1150.com. Immigration.
Immigration it is. Joe Arpaio, front and center as usual. He's the star. Hello, everybody. I'm Rick Sanchez, and we're having a conversation about some of the things that are important. These things are important for America, but unfortunately, they're things that aren't discussed enough, or they're discussed in such a way by the media where they don't give it the import that's necessary. Because they're not invested. That's why they call him Sheriff Joe. If this was an issue that they were invested in, if this was an LGBT issue, it would be huge. They'd be calling this guy all kinds of names, like they called Santorum when he tried to bowl with a pink ball. You know that's true. You can't mess with the LGBT. In some regard, credit to my African-American friends in the community, they've kind of created that in the media. By the way, that doesn't mean the media really gives the African-American or ethnic communities the respect they're due, but they are careful with buzzwords. They are. But for Latinos, hell no. They could give a you-know-what. What are they saying on Twitter, Mo?
Well, for those who wanted to reach out to Rick, you can reach out to him at Rick Sanchez TV, such as Lynn Rains did. She says, "Ugh, the illustrious sheriff makes me so proud to be from Arizona." Not. And Johnny Good says, "The immigration issue is the primary reason why I left the GOP, Rick. I can talk at length about this and the stupidity of the GOP." And finally, Michael Fairbanks says, "How do we get our fellow Americans to think? How do we get voters to use reason and facts, not emotion and myth?"
We're going to do it right here. We're going to do it right here. And by the way, speaking of myth, we've got a segment coming up called Myth Busters with my friends Charlie Garcia and Ruben Navarrete. Ruben Navarrete is nominated for a Pulitzer Prize. He's a very prolific writer. He's a syndicated columnist for the Washington Post. Charlie Garcia, in his own right, appears on CNN and Fox News. These are guys, of course, you usually would expect would be short shrifted by the media, but they have something to say, and they happen to be dear friends of mine. And we're going to tell you about some of the things that are myths, if not just flat out lies, involving Latinos in the United States. And we're going to do this as a segment from time to time. Why not? Nobody else will tell you this. Back to Joe Arpaio. Joe Arpaio actually told me on the air, and he didn't mean to. I caught him. I really did. I caught him. You think for 1 minute he wanted to go on the air and actually admit to this? Let's listen together now to Joe Arpaio talking to me as I'm interviewing him at length, and suddenly the words he doesn't want to slip out of his mouth come out. And after you listen to this, I want you to give me a call here at 877-520-1150. 877-520-1150. I want you to be a part of this conversation. I want you to listen now to Sheriff Joe Arpaio. How do you know when you arrest someone that they're illegal?
Well, first of all, Rick, we do it pursuant to our duties. When we come across someone on another crime and we find out that they are illegal, we take action. If those that have not committed a crime, we had the trainee, we still do, we turn them over to ICE.
Well, but wait a minute. But you just said you detain people who haven't committed a crime. How do you prove that they're not illegal?
It has to do with their conduct, what type of clothes they're wearing, their speech. They admit it. They may have phony IDs. A lot of variables involved.
Did you hear what he just said? Did you hear what he just said? It has to do. So, Mondo.
See?
I think you're illegal, my friend.
That's because of the way I speak and what I'm wearing.
I'm looking at your skin, and you look awfully dark.
Yeah.
You look like a Mexican to me. And you know what? Mondo, how long have you been in this country?
29 years.
You were born here?
Yeah.
How about your dad?
Yeah, born here as well.
Yeah, so second generation, possibly third generation.
Yes.
I know, in fact, I got a friend in Colorado, interestingly enough, whose ancestors have been in the United States for something like 300 years before the United States was formed.
Wow.
And he hears people tell him, go back to your country. Go back where you came from. Just think about that for a minute. Think about the xenophobic response of ignorance when someone would say something like that to someone like that who's been in this country that long. But it's really about a guy like Joe Arpaio. And we're about to have a conversation. And let me get this ready for you real quick here, because I want to tell you about Ruben Navarette, and he and I have, you know, everybody has a friend that they call and have just conversations with about what's going on in the news, what's going on in the media. Ruben Navarette, to me, is one of those people. And we had a conversation about Joe Arpaio once, and he kind of set me straight on who Joe Arpaio really is, where he came from, and what really motivates him. What makes a guy do this type of thing? I mean, he's like right out of the movie Gangs of New York, is he not? And I think Ruben Navarette does that. Let's listen again. So for the record, because I understand. I've been in TV in a long time, and I know you play something once and you didn't quite get it. Listen again as Joe Arpaio tells me that he arrests people based on how they appear, their conduct, their clothes, et cetera. Play it. How do you know when you arrest someone that they're illegal?
Well, first of all, Rick, we do it pursuant to our duties. When we come across someone on another crime and we find out that they are illegal, we take action. If those that have not committed a crime, we had the trainee, we still do, we turn them over to ICE.
Well, but wait a minute. But you just said you detain people who haven't committed a crime. How do you prove that they're not illegal?
It has to do with their conduct, what type of clothes they're wearing, their speech. They admit it. They may have phony IDs. A lot of variables involved.
Their conduct, the clothes they're wearing, and their speech. Their conduct, the clothes that they're wearing, and their speech. Their conduct, the clothes that they're wearing, and their speech. Do you hear that, America? Do you hear that? We'll be right back. I'm Rick Sanchez with Ruben Navarette and Charlie Garcia.
They say radio is a passive medium. I say they are a bunch of fools. Listen like you mean it. K-Talk AM 1150. Immigration.
There's nothing passive about this issue. I'm Rick Sanchez, and it's what we're talking about. If you heard, and you do wonder, don't you? You do wonder why it is that Joe Arpaio can go on national television with Rick Sanchez and say, yeah. Well, here, listen again.
How do you know when you arrest someone that they're illegal?
Well, first of all, Rick, we do it pursuant to our duties. When we come across someone on another crime and we find out that they are illegal, we take action. If those that have not committed a crime, we had the trainee, we still do, we turn them over to ICE.
Well, but wait a minute. But you just said you detain people who haven't committed a crime. How do you prove that they're not illegal?
It has to do with their conduct, what type of clothes they're wearing, their speech. They admit it. They may have phony IDs. A lot of variables involved.
Bingo! Their conduct, the clothes they're wearing, their speech. Their conduct, the clothes they're wearing, and their speech. This, folks, is important. He said it right there. He said exactly what the beef is with him. You have to understand, maybe it doesn't matter to you if you have blue eyes and blonde flowing hair. But if you don't have that, it matters that there's a man going around stopping, detaining, arresting. I don't care, even looking at me and asking me questions based on how I look. Do you know how many people, I have spoken with? When I did this investigation and I went out and spent a week in Arizona, who came to me in tears, mothers, who are perfectly legal citizens of the United States, like Mondo, maybe even here for generations, who cried to me and said, I'm afraid to go out at night because I'm afraid that police will be stopping me. And then what other excuse, if they're embarrassed, will they come up with to arrest me? Or maybe they'll come up with something with my lights or et cetera. See, this is the story that we don't pay enough attention to. And there's a story behind Joe Arpaio. And just like I said moments ago that I was watching cable news last week, or frankly just a couple of days, yeah, Friday, and I listened to a cable news host refer to this man as Sheriff Joe.
Hi, Sheriff Joe. So good of you to join us. Hey, buddy. What's up, buddy pal? What's up? Huh?
Would they do that to somebody else who was being accused of going after a different community? Come on. You tell me. You tell me if these guys are invested in this cause in any way, shape, or form or not. I know two people who are. They're my buddies. We've been working for a time, actually, on creating something special, because we, the three of us, I'm talking about Charles Garcia and Ruben Navarrete, we believe that part of the problem is that there's just not enough information, that everybody who looks at this issue regarding Joe Arpaio and immigration, and frankly a lot of other issues, but let's stay on this one if we can, just are reacting emotionally. They don't know the facts. They don't know the story. They don't know the reality. So the three of us are in some way trying to just get people to know. We don't want to tell you how to think. We don't care if you're on the left, and we don't care if you're on the right. We just want you to know the truth. So we've been doing this thing called myth-busting. And we're starting today, right here, with a Mythbusters segment. My friends Charles Garcia and Ruben Navarrete. What's up, fellas? How are you?
Good morning, Rick.
Hey, Rick, how you doing, baby?
It's good to see you. It's good. Well, you know, I'm so used to talking to you guys. It's almost like we talk every day anyway. So just the fact that we're here on the radio, I just have to warn you not to curse, okay?
It's not going to be an authentic conversation.
Exactly.
Not even in Spanish, huh? Especially not in Spanish.
That's another story. You know, see, that's what happens in radio. You just said something that's going to remind me of a story that I want to tell later, but I don't want to tell it now. So let me move into our myths. I got two myths today, and by the way, we could go on forever. We can't do all our myths today, but we're going to tackle two of them. And the first one, Ruben, I think is kind of your turf. Charlie, the next one is your turf. Ruben, let's start with Sheriff Joe. You'll notice I'm calling him by that moniker because that's how I heard him referred to recently when he was being interviewed about Obama's new policy.
Right.
And the fact of the matter is he's made out to be this Sheriff Buford T. Pusser, when in actuality, you say what?
I say that that everybody has a drug. For some people, it's attention and fame. And for Sheriff Joe Arpaio, it's television cameras. I've known Sheriff Joe Arpaio for more than 15 years. I was a reporter and columnist of the Arizona Republic in 1997 to 1999. And back then, Sheriff Joe was a much different creature. He believed back then that local law enforcement should keep their hands and their mittens off of immigration enforcement because he said it was mainly about resources and the fact that this was not the job of his local deputies. It was the job of federal authorities. What changed over time? Because he realized you can get a lot of political mileage, end up on television, get your face on television a lot if you go out and chase the illegal immigrants. So that's what he does, and he does it purely for the fame and the attention and the television.
So he's completely playing to the crowd, and it's not what's really – well, it certainly wasn't what was in his heart originally. He's changed his tune.
Right. He had it right the first time. I'm the son of a cop. My dad was a cop for 37 years. I don't take any guff from people who lecture me about law and order. I know all about law and order. But most cops will tell you they don't want to enforce immigration law. It makes a mess of things. It confuses jurisdictions. It creates a lot of fear and panic in immigrant communities so that you don't have witnesses coming forward to report other types of crime. This is what Sheriff Joe has done to the detriment of Arizona, and it's all to feed his enormous ego. What you got to understand is that when Sheriff Joe looks in the mirror, he sees Al Pacino looking back.
I'm thinking of that image, and I know Joe Arpaio and what he looks like. And boy, he and I have certainly had plenty of run-ins in the past.
And he's no young Al Pacino.
He's acting. It's all a big charade. It's all a big charade, and he's putting it on at the behest of the American people. And what bothers me, and then we'll move on to our next topic, what bothers me, and this is good for either one of you, the media buys it. They just swallow it, hook, line, and sinker. And if it was a different cause and a different group of people that he was going after, they would not.
It's a good story.
Do you think he could stop African Americans? What if he was stopping African Americans every day and asking for their ID card? Do you think they put up with that?
What about the gay and lesbian community? What if he were messing with them?
Oh, he'd get crucified.
Yeah, there does seem to be. And that's not to say that they shouldn't, you know, I mean, we're talking about being, you know, equal opportunity protectors here. But it does seem funny that this particular group, and we're not talking about people who are illegal, folks. If you're getting ready to dial this number and complain, I'm not talking about people who are illegal. I'm talking about people who are perfectly legal in the United States who are being stopped because they look illegal. Key, look illegal. Charlie Garcia wrote something recently interesting. Boy, did I find this interesting. Charlie has written, let me get to my notes here. We have put something together, the three of us, talking about these myths. And I think one of the myths that I found, and Charlie did the legwork on this one, most interesting, is that this myth that people have, that the country's going to collapse because it's being overrun by Mexicans. Who, as we all know, breed like rabbits. This is literally what people think. When in fact, let's look at the facts and let's look at why the United States of America, if it doesn't have a certain pattern of immigration that the government comes up with, that the government processes and screens and creates, as opposed to this crazy policy we have now, which is really no policy, will actually benefit the United States. Charlie, you got it, my friend.
Yeah, you know, I think what people forget is the currency of the future is not money. The currency of the future is babies. Why? Because babies grow up to pay taxes. Babies grow up to fight our wars and be Navy SEALs and pay for Medicare and Social Security. And that's what people forget. So geopolitical power and countries' economies do not grow unless people reproduce. And there's a fancy term that demographers throw around called total fertility rate.
Mm.
And what it basically means is it measures the average number of babies a woman has to have over her childbearing years for there to be stability. And that magic number is 2.1. So if
our total fertility rate in the U.S. is 2.1. It means we don't grow, but we don't shrink. We stay the same, and that's
stagnant. Stay exactly where we are.
Yeah, and if you stay where you're at, that's not good. And the total fertility rate in the U.S. is 2. We're not at that 2.1 number, so the only way we can grow is through our liberal immigration policy.
Well, wait a minute. You're saying that if we stay at 2, history has shown us that we lose our economic viability.
Yeah, and it's exactly, Rick, what's happening in Europe. Their total fertility rate is like 1.3, which is why the most popular baby name in all of Europe is Mohammed. Because since the Europeans aren't reproducing, they have an Islamic population that is moving into Europe. And in the U.S., one of the most popular baby names over the last 20 years is Jesus, but it's pronounced Jesus.
And look at what, if you look at what's happening in Europe, Charlie's right. If you look at what's happening in Europe, the debates in Europe and what gets people out into the streets is about entitlements. People who want to retire. The big job in Europe is to pressure the government to make sure you have a comfortable retirement. That tells you have an older demographic of people. You don't want this country, the United States, to model some of those European countries where we become
No, you know why? Stagnant. Because you need someone
young
to pay.
People are much more,
you need
young
someone
more
to
vital.
Pay.
Young
you need
more. Right, you need young people. That's the whole idea.
Well, I mean, you know, it's not that we need young people, fellas. It's that we need their ability to pay our taxes. We need them to fight in our wars. We need them to take care of us. We need them to take care of labor. If a society is really old, which we're getting there, right? They're not going to be able to do those things for themselves. They need somebody to come in and do it for them, just as we did during the baby boom. The baby boom is now over. We need someone economically to handle that. Right. And, Charlie, the next step in your logical enthymeme is that that's exactly what happens with the Latino community. Am I wrong?
And let me just throw an interesting number. Our population today is 312 million.
Mm-hmm.
The U.S. Census says that between now and 2050, we grow to about 439 million, and 65% of that growth, 83 million babies, Hispanics. And how many babies are non-Hispanics white throwing into the mix? 4 million. That's it. And the rest are African-American and others.
Charlie, I got to warn you, you're freaking out everybody. Everybody's listening to you is headed for the gun rack as we speak, okay? I have warned you guys about this. You guys freak everybody out.
Did you hear that, Mondo? Run like hell. The Mexicans are coming.
But when they're sitting in their comfortable retirement getting those Social Security checks, they got to remember it's going to be the Hispanic workers that are going to be supporting Social Security.
But they don't want to accept that because now it just ain't a river in Egypt, baby. This is about people not wanting to accept the truth of what you're saying. And you know, we're talking facts, but fear doesn't listen to facts. And the whole immigration debate is driven by fear. Fear of what Charlie is talking about. Fear of demographic change. Fear of a changing
demographic. But it's not a demographic change that's bad. It's not a if people just knew the facts, it's a good demographic change. It's no different than the demographic change that took place with the Italians or the Irish or the Jews or anybody else who can. Charlie, tell America how many Latinos fought in the Vietnam War or died even in the Vietnam War.
Right. Well, if you look at the Vietnam War Memorial, back when only Hispanics were 5% of the population in the 70s, 25% of the names on the Vietnam War Memorial are Hispanics. Hispanics not only fight for the country, but 92% believe in God. They're very, very religious. 66% are Catholic, 25% are evangelical Christians, and 1% are Jewish and other denominations.
So this is something, again, this is demythifying something most American. They were only 4% of the population, and 25% of the people who died in Vietnam, who gave their lives for this country, were Latinos. Yeah, let's kick them out. Let's get them the hell out of here. Tell them, Charlie.
Guys, where are you going to kick them to? I mean, the myth is that this is – here's another myth. This is somehow this is an immigrant community. There are Latinos in New Mexico and Arizona who go back 7 or 8 generations.
Yeah,
Latinos have fought in every war since the Revolutionary War, okay? And there's a perception – and it really does irritate my friends in Arizona and New Mexico who've been here since the 1600s and 1700s that somehow we all got here last week. Where are you going to send these people back to? The homeland of their great-great-great-great-great-great-great-grandfather?
Who was the person who first died in one of the two most recent wars we fought in, Charlie?
That was Lance Corporal Jose Gutierrez, who was a Guatemalan. He was the first combat veteran of the Iraq War. And he was actually, he was an illegal immigrant until they awarded him citizenship after he died.
Wow. Heavy price. Heavy price. Guys, we're out of time. What a great segment. I love this. I love this. Thumbs up. I'll tell you what, this is going to work. We're going to call it myth busting with Ruben Navarrete, Charlie Garcia, and Rick Sanchez. We'll see you, fellas. We'll catch up later. Meantime, this is Rick Sanchez, KTLK. Love to hear what you have to think after that conversation. The telephone number is 877-520-1150, 877-520-1150. You know, a little fact-finding, a little smarts from time to time, it's kind of like vitamin C. It'll do us good, America. We'll be right back.
No one cares how many songs are in your pocket. What you need is a fresh playlist of ideas. K-Talk AM 1150. Immigration.
You know, I came to this country as an immigrant to the United States. And I wasn't born here. I came here. I was brought here by my parents. And I was just a little kid. And I didn't speak a lick of English. I only spoke Spanish. So I had to learn to speak English when I came to this country. And I remember the way I learned was sink or swim. And I believe that's the way it should be today. I believe in immersion. I believe in total immersion. Most people say that when they hear me speak, they don't know that I'm Hispanic. A lot of people say when they look at me, they don't think I'm Hispanic. I guess it depends on the day. And you know how I'm wearing my hat? Si sabe lo que estoy diciendo. But it's true. And the reason I think I succeeded in learning English as a Native American speaker is because nobody cajoled me. Nobody cajoled. You know, when my parents brought me here, there was no ESL. There was no English as a second language. They didn't have a million people studying what to do with... No. Throw them in the damn classroom. That's what they did. Mrs. McIlvain, my first grade teacher. Old, stout, southern woman. Mean as a rattlesnake. And I was scared to the point of peeing in my pants. But guess what? I learned to speak English. I still speak fluent Spanish because my parents don't speak English. That's what I got to talk with them. But I speak English. And these schools that are trying to, I think they're confusing young Hispanic children by creating these programs where they take them out of the general classrooms and put them together with the other Latino kids. That's crazy. Don't do that. That doesn't work. Don't do that. Throw them in there. They'll learn. They're kids. They're like sponges. Mary Kay is calling us from Santa Ana. She's thinking about education as we are as well.
You're talking about this huge Hispanic population that's growing, and they're going to pay our Social Security. But unless the Hispanic population starts to value education and go after the jobs that are in biochemistry, that are in the high sciences and math and all of that area, we're not going to be able to pay our Social Security on their jobs. And I don't see my friends that are teachers constantly tell me that in the Hispanic populations, the education is not valued. It's like, let's get out of high school as soon as we can so we can get a job.
Yep. No, that's true.
Especially for the girls.
And that's been, and by the way, Mary Kay, thank you for calling. That's been the story with immigrants throughout our country. The first group that comes over here, they just want to work. And they're lucky if they can get a high school diploma. And that's what the Italians did, and that's what everybody else did. And then in the second generation, and third generation, and fourth generation, they start going to college. How many people haven't you heard? And by the way, I don't want to diminish your point, because you're right. I have read what you're referring to. Study after study is showing that the dropout rate among Latinos is way, way, way too high. So you're right. But let's put this in perspective. They're first arrivals of their families. And when they first arrive in the United States, I don't care if you go back to the 1700s, the 1800s, the 1900s, or now, it takes the second or third generation for somebody to say, and you hear this all the time, I was the first one in my family who went to college. I was the first one in my family who went to college. That's a fact. That's the way it works. And that's why they take the low-paying jobs. And yes, where you're wrong is they do pay Social Security on those jobs. And it does amount to $13 billion a year. So that other people, not them, so that other people can enjoy their Social Security benefits when they retire. And if you take those people out of the system, those laborers who are paying that, Social Security will go under much sooner than they expect it might. Did you know that? Well, you should. Well, you should. We've got about 45 seconds for Norman calling us from Van Nuys. What up, Norman?
Yeah, hi. Am I on the air now?
You certainly are.
Okay. To begin with, you're absolutely right. In most cases, the thing that I think most Spanish-speaking people don't realize is there's a concerted effort on the part of right-wingers to alienate and disassociate Spanish-speaking people from the rest of the country. Mm. Now, this is a heritage of this country in terms of any other minority that came here.
But how is that different, Norman? How is that different from what they did to the Germans? I can show you right now, going back to the year 1802, where there was a move in the United States to de-quote, this is a direct quote, to de-Germanize Pennsylvania. Too many damn Germans. They're going to destroy our country. Let's get them out of here. I can show you a sign that I keep in my office at home that says, Irish need not apply. We won't feed you. We don't want you here. And we won't hire you. How is that different from what we experience now? Isn't this just generational?
Well, I'll tell you how it's different. To begin with, it is very difficult for anyone of color to assimilate into the general population. What happened to the Irish, what happened to the Jews from Eastern Europe, what happened to the Germans, what happened to everyone except the Indians, I might add, mm-hmm. they were able to assimilate eventually because as they became more, quote, Americanized, mm-hmm. they found themselves able to move out of the ghetto areas, whichever ghettos they were, and to get into business, change their names, as many Jews did, from Goldberg to Parker. Mm-hmm. And the next thing is they're not finding the prejudice. You have to realize now what really is going on. You have these extremists on the right who realize that the Latino population is growing. One vote, one man, and that scares them. Mm. The three elite groups in this country, which is the media celebrity is one, the billionaires or very, very wealthy two, and the politicians. Latinos or Spanish-speaking people are non-existent. They are shadows, and that's because they don't have a political voice. You know.
Thank you. No, Norman, that's a great point, and it's true, and I think to a certain extent they're kept from that political voice. And let me just say something. When you went through your litany, your list of all the people who have had these prejudices put about them in America, you're so right. Especially your point about Jewish Americans. My Jewish American friends who I know on my recent trip to Israel, where I went there and I spent time with people who took me through their stories, and they told me, yes, it was so bad we had to change our name. We had to change our name. I'm Rick Sanchez. This is KTLK.
The Sandusky Trial.
I'm going to play something that's going to freak you out. I am about to play something that is going to freak you out. Remember yesterday when we were on the air, there was something that broke in the Zimmerman trial. We were able to let you hear for yourself what sounded like admissions from Shelley and George Zimmerman in that very much followed case in Florida. Well, guess what? Guess what? We got something on Jerry Sandusky. Oh, that's right. There is a piece of sound that you're about to hear. There is something I am about to play for you that sure makes it sound like Jerry Sandusky is admitting he had sex with boys. He had sex with these boys. But there's a story behind this story. You're not going to believe what a major screw-up this is for NBC News. NBC News was so incompetent, so incredibly incompetent, that they interviewed they interviewed Jerry Sandusky. Sorry, I got my scandals mixed up. They interviewed Jerry Sandusky, and Jerry Sandusky literally said to them, it was kind of like my Arpaio interview, where he accidentally said something he didn't mean to say, but he said it nonetheless. And NBC News, that did this interview for, I guess, what? Was it the Today Show, Mo? Yeah, I think it was the Today Show.
Yeah, it was Today Show.
They missed it. They did an interview with the guy who literally admitted something to them, and when they ran the piece, they forgot to include it. They didn't include it. I don't know. How do you do that? Were they not paying attention? Did they not hear it? But wait, it gets better. Wait. Now the feds or prosecutors have gone to NBC and said, we've learned that you have some tape that might literally be an admission by Jerry Sandusky that he was fooling around with little boys, and we'd like to know if you got that. Because guess what? We want to use that. This is incredible. How is it possible that journalists at a network news organization, okay? We're not talking about the Peoria Gazette over here. You know, we're not talking about a community newspaper. We're talking about NBC News. Had a chance to sit down and interview this guy. He gave him gold, and they didn't put it on the air. And now, as embarrassing as it sounds, and now as embarrassing as it may possibly sound, prosecutors have to knock on their door and say, hey, guys, since you didn't do your job, would you mind if we do it for you? Do you mind if we take a listen to that? Well, guess what? Not only have they gotten it, but prosecutors are going to release this. That's right. This new sound from Jerry Sandusky, I mean, this is what we call in the business gold, is being released. And on the other side of the break, I'm going to play this for you because I want you to listen to what Mr. Sandusky says when he's talking to Bob Costas in an interview that NBC, I guess, did, but then forgot they did. Maybe that's, look, I've been in the business. Maybe that's what happens when you fly in someone to do an interview, and then the producer standing over him is making sure that his makeup and his tie are on right, who then hands the tape over to another producer, who then flies it to New York, and they go through the tape, and they're told we need 20-second cuts here and 50-second cuts there and a 30-second cut here, and they're looking at basically filling holes, and they forget the most important rule of what they're supposed to do, which is journalism. That's right. The first thing you're supposed to do is get information and share it. That's what you do. You're supposed to disseminate good information. That's what journalism is. It's not about filling holes for the Today Show or Dateline or whatever other show you may have that's presented by perfectly coiffed people who usually don't even know what the hell they're talking about. That's right. I'm telling it like it is because I've been there. I speak from experience. I know what it's like. Let's take a quick break, and when we come back, I'm going to let you listen to that tape, and then I want you to react. It's 877-520-1150. You're about to hear Jerry Sandusky literally saying something that prosecutors are convinced is an admission. And this may be the deal breaker in this case for this alleged monster in what he did to these boys. We'll be right back.
A proud sponsor of AIDS Project Los Angeles. K-Talk AM 1150. The Sandusky Trial.
This has to be one of the most amazing episodes of shoddy journalism I've seen in a long time. And guess what? There's a comment now from the folks over at NBC News who've literally been caught red-handed just being, I don't know, what would you call it, incompetent? I mean, if you're a reporter and you're asked to get a story and you interview somebody and they tell you something, if you're interviewing a bank robber and he basically says, well, yeah, I was walking by the bank and I decided I'd go in there because I needed some money, but not, you know, but what? Hello? You know, the prosecutors, NBC does this interview with Jerry Sandusky, and the prosecutors have to now come in and tell NBC, we want that video because we understand that you interviewed the guy and you didn't even air the most salient part of the interview, where he literally seems to admit that he was diddling kids. I ain't kidding. Listen to it.
So it's entirely possible that you could have helped young boy A in some way that was not objectionable, while horribly taking advantage of young boy B, C, D, and E. Isn't that possible?
Well, you might think that. I don't know. In terms of my relationship with so many, many young people, I would guess that there are many young people who would come forward, many more young people who would come forward and say that my methods and what I had done for them made a very positive impact.
Here it comes. Here it comes. Listen now.
And I didn't go around seeking out every young person for sexual needs that I've helped. There are many that I didn't have, I hardly had any contact with, who I have helped in many, many ways.
Oops.
I didn't go around seeking all of them, just some of them.
Oh, my God. Oh, my. Let me read that to you again. I didn't go around seeking out every young person for sexual needs that I've helped. Okay. I guess we would possibly conclude from that he's saying, no, I help people. I help young people, and it had nothing to do with sex. But then he says, there are many that I didn't have, comma, catches himself, I hardly had any contact with, meaning what?
There's no way to misconstrue that.
Who I have helped in many, many ways. This guy's basically saying, I love to help kids. Some of them I helped and I did something with, quote, had contact with. And some of them I just helped and didn't have contact with. And it seems to me, Bo, and look, I defer to you. I mean, I don't want to add this up here if it's not there, but I'm seeing numbers that add up. And if you look at two and two, you got to get four.
I think there are two things here. From a legal standpoint, it's obvious that he's aware that something happened, but I'd be willing to bet if you gave this man a lie detector test, in his mind, in his depraved mind, there probably was nothing wrong with the degree of contact he had. I honestly believe that he is sick in the head.
Wow. I'm telling you. But wait. Remember, one of the most interesting parts of this story is NBC has been sitting on this. NBC News had this and didn't put it out.
Do you blame NBC or do you blame someone like Bob Costas, who was in the moment and has mental memory of the fullness of the interview? You, as someone who interviews people all the time, if you walked away from having that Jerry Sandusky interview and you remember, wait a minute, I remember a part where he basically admitted it and it didn't air. Do you call NBC?
Do you have my interview with Joe Arpaio? Do you have
give him a second so he can pull up that whole interview.
Yeah, because if you got here's Costas doing this interview. The guy says this, and look, and I don't want to blame Bob Costas because it's happened to me in the past. But what you're supposed to do is you latch on to that moment when you hear something that ding ding ding, that's news, and you jump on it. Here's what I did when Joe Arpaio gave me news. Here it is.
How do you know when you arrest someone that they're illegal?
Well, first of all, Rick, we do it pursuant to our duties. When we come across someone on another crime and we find out that they are illegal, we take action. If those that have not committed a crime, we had the trainee, we still do, we turn them over to ICE.
Well, but wait a minute. But you just said you detain people who haven't committed a crime. How do you prove that they're not illegal?
It has to do with their conduct, what type of clothes they're wearing, their speech. They admit it. They may have phony IDs. A lot of variables involved.
My next question, which we didn't put on this because we didn't want to drag it out for you guys because the money line is what he said, but my next question was, wait a minute. Wait a minute, Sheriff Arpaio. You just told me that you arrest people based on how they're dressed, based on how they look, and based on their speech? That was my next question. Right, Mo? Am I lying?
That's exactly what you asked. Exactly.
Yeah.
But you were cognizant of the moment and realized, wait a minute, he just impugned his own credibility.
Well, how did Costas miss that?
I would love to know, because if you've interviewed anyone enough and you're really in the moment and you're listening to the person you're interviewing, you would have to know in that moment he basically admitted to having some level of inappropriate contact. He justifies it by saying, I do help some of the kids. I don't necessarily seek out every kid for that type of behavior.
Well, maybe it's just the problem with the media today where they do these flybys. Oh, we got to do this interview. So we'll bring in, now, you've probably got a reporter who's been working his butt off on this story and has all the sources and knows the story through and through. And then NBC says, get out of the way, Schmedley. We're bringing in the big guns. So they fly Bob Costas in from, look, I don't know if this is what happened, but I will tell you this happens a lot. It's happened to me. I can't name names, but I wish I could, where I've latched onto a story. I had the sources. I had the facts. I had the info. I was ready to go. I call New York and they say, move over. We're going to give it to such and such. And such comes in, not really invested, but, you know, it's not his fault. But he's the guy. He's the face of the network. He has to ask the questions. I'm not allowed to ask them. Get out of the way, you little Puerto Rican. We're going to have this big white guy come in and do this for you because you don't know how to do it.
But you're not going to name names.
What's that?
You're not going to name names.
I'm not going to name names.
Okay.
I'm going to let people imagine who I'm talking. Send your suggestions to Rick Sanchez TV on Twitter. Well, I mean, you know, I've worked in the business a long time. It could have been at this network. It could have been at that network. There's NBC. There's that one. There's that one. There's that one. There's local. Trust me. So maybe the guy comes in, he's jet-lagged, he's tired, he does the interview, they take the tape, they hand it to some intern, she gives it to another person, they give it to a production assistant in New York, they go through the tape, and they got to find something. And instead of going through the entire interview and logging it, they just kind of hear what they think is good. In fact, I have for you, Mo, guess what I have right here?
Do tell.
I have a statement from NBC.
Dígame.
Te voy a decir en este momentico lo que está pasando. Well, that sounded weird. It said, I'm going to tell you right now.
No puedo esperar.
That's good, baby. I'm going to teach you this language. So, an executive at NBC News who is asking that her identity be withheld. Boy, it's a good thing she is, because this is not a smart comment. Tells Fox News on how they missed this. Well, quote, there were a lot of compelling moments in the original interview, but we just didn't have time to include them all. What? What's that like? We got 3 out of 4. That's the money line. That's the juice.
That's the whole point of having him on in the first place.
That was the gold. You interviewed a guy accused of molesting children, and he literally utters words that make it sound like he did, in fact, molest children, and you cut that out of the interview. And now you come back and say, yeah, but we had other good stuff that was good.
They doubled down on the stupidity. Not once, but twice.
What do we say around here? It's not the crime, it's the cover-up?
Yes, yeah. Yes.
Why not just say,
oops.
Oops, oh my God, we feel terrible. Which is exactly what HBO should have done as well. Did you hear about what HBO did? HBO has the head of former president, the head of the former president of the United States, and they've decapitated George Bush's head, bloody and decapitated, and they put it in an episode. I mean, talk about mean, talk about partisan, talk about stupid. And when they were asked about why they did that, you're not going to believe what their response was. I'm going to tell you when we come back right here on KTLK. I'm Rick Sanchez.
Talk radio for people who think before they speak. K-Talk AM 1150. Game of Thrones.
Unbelievable, the story that has developed with Game of Thrones. You can't help but wonder if this, too, is another case of just media stupidity. And then what makes it worse is when you're caught red-handed, just admit it. You know the story, right? I'm looking at the picture now. Game of Thrones is a great show, according to everyone I know who watches it. And in this show, which I'm told by my good friend Steven Espinoza, over at Showtime, interestingly enough, that once you're into it, you can't stop watching, kind of like the way I am with Mad Men. Well, in this show, they have an episode where they take the decapitated head of someone who happens to be, well, I was going to say it's a striking resemblance to George Bush. It is George Bush. They actually have George Bush's head decapitated and bloody with an old wig on, making him look like some kind of character out of the Elizabethan times. And it's really grotesque. But, okay, the show's supposed to be grotesque. This is the president of the United States. This guy was the... I don't care what you think of him. See, this is what makes Hollywood just lose credibility here. How do you... You can't do that. This is, you know, you can't do that. Doesn't matter if you're on the left or on the right or what, but you can't just, well, you hate this guy, so yeah, it'll be real funny. We'll take George Bush's head and we'll put it on steak all bloody like someone decapitated. That's just not in good taste. You're supposed to respect that. Yes, his presidency was an absolute catastrophe. There's nothing, hardly anything he didn't screw up. But he was still the president of the United States. And we respect the office of the presidency. Yes, even Hollywood should respect the office of the presidency. And to play this game where they put his bloody head up on a stick is not right. You know it, and I know it. And I wish they knew it, and I think they do now, because to their credit, HBO has apologized, but not at first. Not at first. What do you think of this, by the way? I'm interested because I know a lot of people are listening to this show and you guys are like trying to figure me out. And people are sending me tweets from all over the country. Here's one that just came in a moment ago. It says, Sanchez, what are you? Are you like a libertarian? Are you conservative? Are you liberal? What are you? I can't figure you out. That's Johnny Good. And, by the way, Johnny Good just also sent me a text saying what HBO did to the Bush beheading incident was incredibly in poor taste. And I can't believe someone approved that crap. So, you know, that's what I'm asking. But here's what gets interesting. Mo, let's get some people on the line here. What's the number?
877-520-1150. You can call Rick Sanchez right now at 877-520-1150.
And if they want to reach us on Twitter?
Rick Sanchez TV. That's at Rick Sanchez TV.
The national conversation continues. And as it does, I need to tell you what originally, you're not going to believe this. There's a fella who is the creator of the show. His name is David Benioff. David Benioff, I think that's how you pronounce his name. He said, this is almost funny. He said, the last head on the left is that of George Bush, he admits. Because a lot of people who had seen the episode, they took this shot, they put it up, and thank goodness the power of social media and the power of the internet, people caught this. They were probably hoping nobody would see it. It was like a little wink-wink game they were playing amongst themselves. But somebody caught it. brought it to the attention of others, and soon everybody was knowing about it. And now here we are talking about this, which I think is it's important socially and politically. So he goes on to say, George Bush's head does appear in a couple of beheading scenes. He goes on to say, then, it's not a choice. It's not a political statement. Here's the part I like. Mondo, you ready?
Yep.
Here's what he says. He says, we had to use whatever heads we had lying around.
So they had his head lying around. Nice.
Wait a minute. Okay, I'm confused. We had to use whatever head. What? George Bush's head is lying around in your studio somewhere? The decapitated head of George Bush is sitting in your studio.
It's on the coffee table.
Hey, you mind if I ask why? I mean, John, help me here, man. John's joining us now. He's in, where are you? Oh, John's in Orange County.
Yeah, go ahead.
What's up, John? You're on the air with Rick Sanchez.
Yeah, Rick, you know, no matter what he did, good or bad, you know, they are, none of them are perfect. They go from one regime to another, and that's just don't going too far. That is the president of the United States, mm-hmm. the greatest country in the world. That's going too far.
I agree.
None of them are perfect. You know, we all know that, whether left or right, like you said, but that's going too far, I think.
Thank you, man. Hey, by the way, what do you think of the response? What do you think of this thing where he says, let me read it to you so I'm very – we had to use whatever heads were just lying around.
No, that's an excuse. An excuse is nothing but a lie, stuff with a reason. That's wrong. That's the president of this greatest country of the world. That's wrong what they did.
Thank you, John. Marcy joins us now from L.A. Marcy, what do you think of this what do you think of this crazy situation?
I disagree with you. I think America needs to get some integrity. Why should we respect somebody who stole two elections, who needs to be in jail for crimes against humanity as well as other crimes? That was an absolutely lawless administration. Why should decent Americans respect that?
Well, you have the right to say, but wait, the beauty of this is, though, my dear Mars, you have the right to say that, and you just did. You're on the air being heard by people in many cases all over the country expressing your opinion on this president. But isn't there a difference between saying what you just said, which you're entitled to, and actually putting him on a nationally televised show with his head decapitated and bloody?
That's what people throughout the world believe because they drop bombs on innocent human beings. They committed so many crimes. You can't respect that. Why should we teach our children to respect that behavior in anybody?
Here's why. Here's why. Here's why, Marcy. Because once we go down that road, there's no turning back. You see, we live by principles in this democracy. And we know that there are those on both sides who from time to time do things which we find deplorable. But in the end, I will tell you now, as an immigrant who came to this country from another place where they truly do not respect the laws, that the reason we should cherish what we have with all its faults, because of all the imperfect countries in the world, we are the number one, is because once we start going down that road, once we forget that there's a set of principles among those respect the presidency, it falls apart. We're gone. It doesn't work. That's really important. We can't give in. If you think the other side's wrong, you don't jump in and do as they do. You don't jump in and do as they do. You still honor what's right, and it's what we should teach our children as well. Romero, joining us from Orange County.
What's up, Rick? How's it going?
I'm doing well, my friend. What's up with you? One of my best friends in high school was named Romero Sicri. He was a blonde-haired, green-eyed Latino who was safety on our football team. Good kid, by the way.
Kind of like me, then.
Exactly. Handsome devil that you are. What do you got for us, man? We're down to about 45 seconds.
I just think it's sort of funny in a way how, you know, maybe a producer said to a new guy, hey, you know, get me a head or something, and he just came with George Bush's head or something. Can you imagine that? Hey, new guy, get me a head, you know? And he comes with George Bush.
And when they questioned him about it, he probably said, maybe I should have brought Hubert Humphrey. I guess you got to be as old as me to get that. Mondo's looking at me like, who the hell is Hubert Humphrey? Romero, we got to go to break. Thanks for calling and sharing, man. I am loving doing this. This is a great experience that we're having. And this whole dynamo, this L.A. environment is, I'm loving it. We're having a good time, Mondo. Mondo.
Olé.
877-520-1150. Let's finish up with a couple of good volley of calls. I know there's a bunch of you there. We got Brad who wants to join us from Tulsa, Oklahoma. And we've got Bill who wants to talk to us from Long Beach. Both of you, stay there, fellas. We're coming back. I'm Rick Sanchez, and this is your National Conversation.
The talk radio revolution is here. Keep telling friends. K-Talk AM 1150. Game of Thrones.
And it's Game of Thrones that we're talking about. I'm Rick Sanchez, and this is the message we just got from Susan G. Now, she's upset with me. She's joining us via Twitter. So are many, many people from all over the country. We're glad you're there. She says, Sanchez, Rick, why are you so shocked? They do worse every day to President Obama. That's her opinion. That is what she says, and my counter is, it's still wrong. It's still wrong. You can't get rid of that. We got a bunch of people on the line before we close out the show, and I certainly want to first go to Brad because he's paying the most for this call because he's all the way in Tulsa, Oklahoma. Tulsa. What's going on, Mr. Tulsa? You know who went to Tulsa, by the way? You know who went to Tulsa? When I was growing up as a kid, I played football, and my idol as a kid was a fellow from Tulsa. I guarantee you it's going to be way before your time. Ask your parents or something. His name was Howard Twilley. Howard Twilley was my idol as a little kid playing football. Enough said.
Twilley is well known around here as a major factor at the University of Tulsa for a long time.
Really?
Yeah. He's still well known here and still well respected as in the history of the University of Tulsa and the Golden Hurricane. So yeah, absolutely. No, I mean I wasn't around then, which hopefully doesn't date me. But he's well known around here, Rick.
Well, so. I was a little kid when he played for the Miami Dolphins the year they won the Super Bowl and were undefeated. He wore number 81 and I love the man. Sorry to get you off track. You're talking about
problem.
I think you're calling to tell us something else. I don't know what it is, Brad.
Well, I mean, I'm a journalist like you are, and I really watch the industry very much and care about the industry passionately because I think that we have a job to do, and that's what the Communications Act of 1934 set forth, that we were supposed to and the industry was supposed to serve the public. And I look at what happened with the Communications Act of 1996 that was under Bill Clinton, and I'm just wondering, I think that was the beginning of the end that really has killed this industry and put this industry in the position that it's in. It was supposed to be, the act was supposed to foster competition, and maybe it did that, but it allowed huge conglomerates to buy dozens and dozens of stations and turn this industry into not serving the public, but all for profit. And I understand there needs to be a profit. I understand people need to make money, but they've really ruined it. And I'm sure you're sitting there nodding your head up and down because I know how you feel about that because you're just as passionate as me. But the public doesn't seem to realize that this really affects them in terms of how they're served and
what
they know about their government.
Thank you. Thank you, Brad. You're absolutely right. I think in the end, it's all about caring about the viewers, caring about the listeners, caring about the readers. If your job is to get and disseminate information, you have to think first about them and then maybe about you or the bottom line or your company. And unfortunately, at the root of this problem is too many people aren't thinking about the listener, the viewer, the reader. They're thinking about something else, and that's why the system has gotten screwed up, and that's why I'll continue to bust them on this show every day. Dorian calls us, and Dorian, it sounds to me like you're no fan of George Bush, right?
That's right. You know what should happen instead of the add-on his ghost? What they should do is place a 3,000 ghost of the World Trade Center on his bed tonight instead of having his head put on a stick. Because if I die tomorrow, either he had this country attacked or either he knew what was going to happen.
Okay. Thank you, Dorian. I got to tell you, with all due respect, that's crazy talk. Okay? That's crazy talk. Crazy talk. George Bush did not plan to attack the World Trade Center, nor was he part of a conspiracy to make it happen. I was there. I had part of the debris from the building fall on top of me. I ran like hell and then rolled into a garage owned by a Ukrainian. And we all huddled, hoping that everything else around us would not fall down. Conspiracy theorists have used me as their example because on that day, if you Google me and the conspiracy surrounding this, you'll hear and see me reporting and saying, I've just been told by police that there may be secondary explosives. It's true. It's what they said. It's what they thought. Turns out it wasn't the case. But let's not take what is fair and just criticism of a screwed up policy and turn it into something as crazy as he actually was behind the attack. That's nuts. Come on. We're better than that. We're better than that. You lose credibility when you argue from that point of view. When you argue that, you're no better than a birther. You're no better than a birther. You're no better than some crazy guy going around telling everybody that Obama was born in some other country, despite the fact that there was actually a report in the newspaper the day he was born. How do you fake that, Donald Trump? We got enough time to get one more call in. Let's do it. Bill is in Long Beach, and Bill wants to be a part of our conversation. Hey, Bill, how are you?
Okay, Rick, how are you doing?
Doing fine.
Hey, look, this story was out 3 days ago. The studio apologized.
Yeah, they did.
They said they made a mistake. And, you know, it's like you're just running this into the ground. And I have to give them credit. They did apologize whether you accept it or not. But when you get to Mitt Romney and the Republicans and the stuff that they've done to Obama, you haven't heard one apology.
Well, I think I think in politics, some people would say it's all fair game. There used to be rules that were set, and
you're right. Fair game when it's one way.
Yeah.
Mitt Romney has been caught in lie after lie after lie.
Well, but you know, the beauty of the system, thank you, Bill, that we have right now is you go through the primary season and that's when you're allowed to talk to your base. And then when you get out of the primary system, then you have to talk to the general public. And they're two different audiences. So somehow the mainstream media has decided that it's okay to lie during primaries. Look, man, I don't get it either. I wish I did. But fact of the matter is, I was hearing the lies just like you were during the primary season and hearing people say things that made my head spin. And the media needs the ratings from those debates, so they just kind of play along. You're not going to kill the goose that laid the golden egg. Every time you had one of those debates, the ratings shot up. So you just keep feeding them whatever crap you can so that they keep talking about this stuff, even though you know that half the time what they're saying doesn't even mean anything. And isn't going to matter in the general election. And you know that they're saying something in South Carolina that they wouldn't say in California. Or saying something in West Virginia that they certainly wouldn't say in New York. But you just kind of move along and keep on just making sure you have the next debate and the next series. And that's the way it is. And we need to know that that's the way it is. Because that's not the way it should be. And I thank you for pointing that out. And I thank you for spending some time having this discussion, this conversation that we were so proud of for so long that we're reestablishing. I enjoy this. I saw a man last night on my way home from dinner. He was watering a plant. I asked him, "What are you doing?" He says, "This plant was broken by someone." And I said, "Well, what are you doing?" He says, "I'm going to bring it back. One magnolia plant." This man cared about it. Maybe we all need to care about one thing like that man cared about his magnolia plant, we'd make this a better place. I'm Rick Sanchez. God bless everybody. We'll do this again tomorrow, eh? Right here on KTLK AM.